Welcome back to the Big Move Podcast. I'm your host, Em. I'm a content creator, podcast producer, and a mother. And as I thought about a new season of the podcast, I went back to my roots and what made me start this show to begin with. At its core, it's this idea of connection, relatability, and motivating each other through the impactful conversations we're having as women. I'll be talking to the same powerhouse caliber of female guests that I know are going to light you up, but we're getting real on how they've redefined themselves in entirely new seasons and phases of life. We're honing in on what fuels us, what brings us back to ourselves, and ultimately, what keeps us moving. So with that, let's get into new episodes. Before we get into today's episode, I need to fill you in on my latest beauty obsession. It's the best-selling beauty brand Tower 28. Designed for sensitive skin, their founder Amy Liu spent 20 years as a beauty exec before launching. Their award-winning SOS skincare line is the first to earn seals of approval from all three leading U.S. skin health organizations, the National Eczema Association, National Rosacea Society, and National Psoriasis Foundation, a testament to its commitment to skin-safe, effective formulations. Two products I'm using right now and loving are their Swipe Serum Concealer. It's insanely hydrating and glides on like a serum. So forget those annoying under eye creases. Not to mention, it's the number one trafficked concealer at Sephora. And their SOS Rescue Spray, a facial spray that's gone viral on TikTok. It's a natural anti-inflammatory that helps defend your skin against harmful bacteria. My rosacea prone skin loves this spray for reducing redness and any irritation I'm having. Use code THEBIGMOVE20 for 20% off your purchase and look out for an upcoming episode with their founder, Amy Liu, to learn even more about this incredible brand. Neha, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so pleased to have you on today. I was just telling you, it's very fitting because my podcast has actually been on pause for the last year and a half. And when I think about a new season and jumping back into conversations with women that I admire, and really diving heavier into the topic that is motherhood and specifically identity, you feel like so much at the forefront of all of those topics. And so I'm so eager and pleased to dive into everything with you today.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
So just to set the stage, can you give our audience a background on who you are and what you're all about?
Sure. I am a mom of two. I have Bodhi, who is 9.5, and Lila, who is just shy of 7. And before kids, I was a brand marketer. I had clocked in about a decade between advertising and a MBA from Stanford. And I had what was on paper, my dream job, running a brand at a tech company. And then I had my kids, my first one. And I really felt this desire for more time with him, but also more time to just discover who I was going to be in this next chapter. I think I was really curious and interested in motherhood in a new way that I'd sort of lost that curiosity in my work. So I initially downshifted into part-time work. Eventually I'd pause. But as soon as I did, I felt this shame and stigma around the quote unquote stay-at-home mother, right? An ambitious woman who said she wanted more time with her kids. And it was at the height of the lean in movement, the height of the girl boss era. And everywhere I looked, there was this great content about the traditional working parent, right? Like there was great content saying this is what success looks like, but it seemed to count myself and so many women I was meeting out and left us with this very antiquated perception. So I started what was then a small blog and a small Instagram, starting this conversation about, well, what might it look like to change that perception and really shine a light on the modern woman making these complicated choices, finding ways to grow and create alongside their kids. And if we could change that, maybe it would open up more options for women. And that project started in 2017 and grew into the book and platform, The Power Pause. And now we're about 250,000 women strong, with a ton of free resources that I encourage women to check out, and really having shifted the cultural conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have so many specific and meaty questions around The Power Pause. Your book's incredible. The platform you've built is incredible. I guess to sort of rewind in talking about your journey into motherhood, did you have any expectations going into motherhood? Did you always want to be a mom, or what did that look like for you?
I think that I had never put motherhood and work in separate boxes. I never had given it much thought beyond knowing that I wanted to be a mother at some point. I wanted a family. I loved watching my own mother. I loved my work. But to me, I had never really thought too much about the distinction of the two. It was always just a mix of family and work. And I think that was to my benefit, because when I stepped into family life, even when I got married, I think I was already thinking like, well, how might this all work in a really creative way? But it didn't feel stressful or anxiety inducing. It felt fluid.
Yeah, that's fair. And now your kids are 9.5 and 7. So I guess if we sort of rewind and you think about your postpartum self and your first foray into having that first child, was there anything that sticks out in your mind from an identity perspective or from a personal perspective that felt incredibly challenging?
You know, it's interesting. And I think such a reminder that you can have such different experiences child to child. Because when I transitioned into motherhood with Bodhi, I felt for the first time a sense of belonging and a sense of peace and comfort in my own skin. I think after years of trying to fit, I suddenly felt like, oh, I don't have to try so hard. And I think that was really freeing. So from an personal identity perspective, I think the bigger shift was sharing with my circles that I wanted more of that time and realizing that for a lot of people, they didn't approve of that decision. Like they didn't, it sort of clashed with their perception of me up until that point, right? I had friends say, are you giving up? Are you going to be bored all day? I think re-meeting my husband, who had met me when I just gotten into business school, we'd always bonded over our careers. I think re-meeting each other, where I was more interested and curious in routines and rhythms to help our child sleep. I think that was the big shift, was I felt really clear and confident for the first time, ironically, in motherhood. And yet I felt, after loving being approved of and approval and seeking approval for so long, it was the first time I was like, oh wait, I'm making decisions that not everyone is as excited about as I am. And that tension was really interesting. I think that was a big catalyst for this work, was I was looking at myself feeling like, wait a second, I think my brain is opening up. I think I feel, this is actually an unlock. Why does everyone else think I'm so going to be so bored? And then ironically, when I had my second child, I think I had created so many rules around what a good mother was for myself. And having a second child upended those rules in a big way, right? In terms of time spent with the child, in terms of sleeping, in terms of what food I was doing, you know? And so I think that was a more colossal personal shift.
I actually love hearing that you had such a positive experience. It almost sounds like having your first child really grounded you. And I feel like we often don't always hear that story. So I love to hear that. So you had this huge career. You are so rooted in that identity. So between your first and your second child, from a career standpoint, what are you grappling with and how are you navigating that piece?
So between my first and second, I negotiated a 2-day-a-week work week, which I think was this, on paper at least, a perfect version of balance, right? It allowed me to stay connected to my work while also being at home. I think what became fairly clear about a year in was that once you're a mother, A, it makes you more efficient, but also the bar goes up on how you're spending your time. And I really felt much more intrigued by creating this work around the power pause. Eventually I said, if I'm going to be spending time away from my child, I want it to be on work that's mine. And I want to have a lot more determination of it. And as I was preparing for my second, I was also looking at just the reality of how my time was going to be spent from a day-to-day perspective. And I couldn't figure out how I was going to chop it all up with 2 children and this project. So I eventually let go of part-time work. But I think what I was becoming fairly obvious was there is no perfect version of balance, and it's constantly moving over and over again. And it's a lot more smudgy, even if you can try and compartmentalize it. I think when you go from something that feels impressive outwardly and then have to make a choice because it feels really true to what works for you and your family and what you really want. And I think for me, the biggest challenge was reconciling not being approved of, not looking impressive on the outside. Because even whether it was in the consulting role I was in or when I was just nurturing this mom blog on the side of family life, there was a lot of chatter around like, oh, like she went to business school and this is what she's doing. And I think cultivating a sense of being able to do things that feel right based on the fact that they're uniquely right for you and your family, that when you look back on this time, you won't regret it. And having to tune out at other people's perceptions becomes your superpower. Like that is now serving me. But I would say that was the biggest tension during those years.
Yeah, fair. Something I think is really interesting. Like they say the days are long, but the years are short, right? Often it can feel like there's so much time in those years in early motherhood. There's also those years. And it seems like Mother Untitled was years in the making. Were you chipping away each day or did you have this overnight revelation? I'd love to hone in on what that looked like for you.
I'm so glad you asked because I think it's a really important piece of this. Someone asked me recently, they were like, but were you on a career pause because you had this project alongside? And I looked at them and I thought, wow, that's so funny because you've now met me with a book out 9 years later, right? But one of the big challenges for women is that not only do we get held to a high standard on how we mother and how we work, but then when we choose anything non-traditional, it's often diminished. So for me, the overnight revelation was me walking in 2016, I had Bodhi, he was maybe 7 months old, and I walked into a baby movement class and I look around and I'm meeting these women and all of them have either downshifted or they're paused, and one was a banker, one was the head of merchandising at somewhere. And I was like, wait a second, none of this matches the stereotypes we've been handed. And that was the overnight revelation. But the format that I could deliver that message in had to be small for the reality of what I actually wanted, which was more time with my kids, right? And so what was hard was starting it in a capacity that worked for me, which was a free Squarespace site and a newsletter and an Instagram, right? And I committed that I was going to post 3 times a week. I was going to do a profile on a woman I met that helped reshape the perception of ambitious women leaning into family life. I was going to write a post about different workplaces that were bringing women back. I had sort of a construct of what I wanted to talk about. And by the way, the mission has not changed. I went back to read the first newsletter I ever sent, exact same language I use now. However, it was in a capacity that was small by other people's standards, right? And I remember going to my 5-year business school reunion and hearing someone be like, oh, she's like a little mom blog, and thinking, oh my God, but this is like a game-changing movement around women and work. And I never said anything because I think one of the gifts was realizing that you have to do things for a long time for people to eventually buy in. And this was at the time something that felt not controversial, but I think it was still the height of the girl boss era. And I had people say, do you feel like it's anti-feminist? And I was like, how is it anti-feminist to give women more options, right? Mm-hmm. But it was very small and only over 9 years. I'll tell you, my kids aged into school. We were talking about when they both go to the same school, it's a big unlock. So 2021, 2022. And culture was really ready at that point, right? The pandemic had just happened and people were sort of thinking, well, why are women leaving the workforce? What isn't working? And so timing is everything. But it was very much showing up 3 times a week to have the same conversation for 9 years that let us be here now.
Yeah. No, and I love hearing that. I feel like we need to hear more of those stories of, you know, for example, we see you on the Drew Barrymore show sharing your book and you're on a book tour, right? But we don't get to see the years in the making. And how funny for you to sit here now too and laugh at that woman who was saying you had a small mom blog, you know, the mommy bloggers, right? It's just...
Well, we diminish. I think I share that story because... It was a mom blog. It was a blog about motherhood and career. And small things can have big impact, right? And I think we diminish women's work, whether we call it a lifestyle project, we call it a passion project, or we call it an Instagram thing, or we call it an influencer thing. And we don't realize these are really interesting, creative endeavors that help women grow, help women make money. You know, while it might have taken us such a small shape, what was interesting about those years behind the scenes was I was really cultivating a lot of French because I had something I would cared about. I was able to talk to all these other women on the internet and connect. And so many of those connections served me when I was ready to grow and dial up, right? So I share that because if someone's working on a small project, and even if it doesn't necessarily have a big thesis or a big sort of end goal, I think it still lets you be able to feel passionate about something and connect and create, and it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a million more questions for you around the Power Pause and Mother Untitled, but I do have one more question back to the sort of piece around identity and motherhood. And something that I've really grappled and struggled with is, and again, my kids are 2.5 and 5. So in a little bit of a different season, I'm out of those postpartum baby stages, but it's still evolving, it's changing. And I feel like I entered into motherhood feeling like this is a linear experience. It's going to get easier, right? And that is like proven to my detriment to not be true. Is there a reframe or a way that you feel like women can go into motherhood setting expectations in maybe a more realistic way?
I would offer that it's a long game, right? It's a long game of work. It's a long game of family life. It's a long game of womanhood. And I think part of the reason for this work is never to say that pauses are the right choice or downshifts are the right choice. It's to say it's another choice that may serve you in the long game and staying open to whatever you may need in any given season, because it's going to shift over and over and over again. And so taking life in smaller increments to make the best right choice for right now, I think about that in the context of, you know, help, right? Like I've gone through different versions of, do I have a babysitter a few afternoons? When I transitioned to my second child, I brought on a mother's helper for a year. You know, different seasons in parenting call for different needs in the family, different amounts of time that you may need to change direction from other areas of your life, different ways to communicate with your partner, right? And I think being open to the fact that it's always changing and ever evolving and we are ever evolving with it is a really important piece. I will tell you that even at the ages my kids are now, while I have a lot more time back because they are dependably in school, it's more demanding of headspace in the evenings, right? So I'll give you the example that I really try and reserve most of my evenings at home, where before when they were little, I was with them so much during the day that I was like, I'm happy to go out at night. And now I feel like 5 to 8 is precious in our house. And so you can see how you're just constantly recalibrating.
Yeah, absolutely. I can relate to that so much. I have an older sister and she has 3 kids, 2 teenagers and a 10-year-old. And she has said that to me for many years. She was like, it becomes that less like physical manual labor that we're so heavy in. And it's more to that mental space. When we're thinking about these two ideas of self, our pre-child self and our post, what are they can be the big things, the little things that you do that sort of bring you back to really just feeling like your true self?
Well, I think there is, to me, it's just an ongoing evolution. It's the same self, right? We change from age 5 to 10, age 10 to 15, age 15 to 20, right? We're always changing. And we go through different stages of life, right? Our career being one in our 20s. And then when we enter family life, it's naturally another evolution. And I think to me, when you stay open to not necessarily a loss of self, but really a evolution of self where you're sharpening your perspectives, you're maybe letting go of things that feel less important in this season, where you're discovering potentially new interests. And I think for me, a big part of motherhood was letting go of what wasn't as important.
Yeah.
And ego was a big part of that, right? Mm-hmm. I had a lot of ego wrapped up in how people perceived my career. And so this has been like the ultimate unlock, when you can really say what matters more, how it really feels in the day to day, and how, when I look back, I'll have wanted to spend this time, or how other people think. And so what brings me back often to what really matters, I'll reframe it that way, mm-hmm. is I will think a lot about what my North Star is, like what are my goals for right now. I encourage women in my work to have goals that are distinct from your kids, because too often, whether you pause your career or make room for family life, it's so easy to say like, well, I guess my new success is how my kids behave. And if that becomes sort of how you're optimizing your time, it's going to feel like life is happening to you, or you're not as much in control of your day to day. So I really encourage women, and I do this myself, to think about, well, what does success look for me? Like for me in this season. And I offer one way to do that is to write in great detail what your ideal day looks like in 5 years. How are you spending time? How do you feel in your body? How does your home feel? How does your relationships feel? Not because that's going to be who you're going to be tomorrow, but because it'll often crystallize, what are my personal goals right now? What are some professional goals right now? What are some family goals that are really true? Like, clearly, if that is my ideal version in 5 years, those are my like truest metrics of success. And then break them into these like little incremental things that measure our time, that dignify this time. For me on a personal level, it's really working on reactivity, right? Like, that to me is something that I want to always heal and cultivate like a practice around. I want to feel stronger. So what are sort of small ways to move that forward? And I think allowing ourselves to know that we're growing alongside our kids is one of the best ways to honor that ourself and that ourself is constantly evolving.
I actually love that you mentioned goal setting. And I feel like I just finished that portion of the book where I had never really thought about that in motherhood, right? Like, I feel like we are often most days just trying to survive. Mm. But in that comes overwhelm, frustration, really hard moments with toddlers, like literally fighting with each other from 6 a.m. Like, you're hanging on by a thread. But I loved that you give that tangible takeaway of goal setting, just like we do with our career or with our businesses that we're setting up. It's like we should head into motherhood almost in that same way. And to your point, like, it doesn't need to be like an overwhelming exercise. It can be just writing down like a few simple priorities and goals.
And when I was in the stage you were in, which was so intense for me personally, I found that like 4 and 2 is hard. It was also COVID. So, you know, there was that. I remember it was just like, have a silly household. Like, I just wanted them to look back and to look back. It was like, have a dance party every single Monday. And from Cultivate Calm, it was, I'm going to listen to a podcast every single week on like women and anger, or women and communication, or women and emotions. And like, those were small, measurable, attainable. Obviously, you know, in this season, those goals have expanded and those metrics, I have more capacity. But however, whatever scale that metric is, just it just makes your time feel like yours again.
Yeah, absolutely. So you shared a clip from your segment with Drew Barrymore on the Drew Barrymore Show, and it kind of hit the nail on the head for me when we talk about identity. You said that it doesn't have to be an identity crisis. It can be an identity revolution. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that reframe? But that just struck home for me.
Yes, I think it sort of goes back to what we were just speaking about, that when you asked like, what would allow you to go back to yourself? I don't think of myself now as being separate from myself then. I don't think it's a loss of self as much as it's an evolution of self and a sharpening of perspective and skills and a clarity on what matters and what doesn't. And sometimes it feels hard because your time is limited. So you're letting go of things that maybe you're not ready to let go of. But if you're doing it with intention, you realize looking back, like you let go of the pieces that probably didn't serve you and it led you to where you're meant to be next.
Yeah. I love that reframe. And I think we can all take such a tip from that. So in talking about Mother Untitled, the power pause, everything you've built, I'd love to talk on specifically the gray area. I think I came back from London 2 years ago and I didn't really know what my place was going to sort of be here. I was going to be in the suburbs, but I felt very seen when you shared that in just a very digestible way. So for listeners, can you just talk about the gray area and what it is exactly?
So the gray area is my language around this sort of vast in between of, to me, the black and white ideas of stay at home and working mother. Right. I think those labels only serve to divide us. And I think when we part with those labels, we actually recognize that so many of us exist in that vast in between. Right. We may be cultivating personal growth alongside family. We might be investing in small projects alongside family life. We may be volunteering. We may be working part time. We may be working, consulting, freelancing. But when we talk about this sort of vast in between, what it allows for us to do is feel more like, well, we can dial up and dial down with less shame and with less penalty, mostly with less division. If you look at the sociolinguistics of stay-at-home mom, it's just stagnant and it's just shut in. And the gray area is really language designed to just say you're in the in-between. And I think when we feel less like we're in a box, it opens us just so much more possibility.
Yeah. And I feel like we are seeing more of that than ever before. And women that are working part-time, consulting, starting something new. So on that note, how do we know when to maybe lean into work or lean into family life? Do you feel like there are signs? What advice would you have around that?
First of all, I would just say it's such a personal decision based on the ages, stages of your children, your current role and how demanding it may be, the stress in your home. We commissioned a survey called the American Mothers on Pause Survey of 1,200 at-home parents and 1,000 members of the general population. The most commonly cited reasons to pause were the very valid want to have more time with your kids, less stress in the home, burnout, and the cost of childcare. And so you can see that oftentimes those overlap. And what I encourage women to really think about is what are they trying to optimize for right now? You know, if it is more headspace with their child or children, maybe they could negotiate a lateral move in their company so that they don't have as many sort of dependents, quote unquote, in the company, right? They're not managing as many people. If it's more time, but they still love what they do, can they negotiate a part-time schedule? If it's burnout and a reset with what they do and they want more time with their kids, and oftentimes that overlaps, then a pause does allow you to sort of to explore other options while staying connected to your family, right? So you can see how there's so many different permutations, but I do encourage people to take at least 6 months in planning for that shift, including the financials with your partner, even if it's a financial no-brainer. I think being able to know that both partners are invested in the decision, that they see and respect each other's contributions, paid and unpaid, just lets you be able to walk through the stage of life feeling more confident.
Totally makes sense. And I think something that I know that I struggled with, and I know a lot of women have struggled with, is sometimes feeling a frustration, right? Even in our day-to-day of like, I'm losing steam. I'm so ingrained in motherhood. There's not enough hours in the day. There's not enough time. Like, how am I going to get back on my game, right? So what's your POV there? What's the better reframe in terms of downshifting, in terms of taking a pause, perhaps?
I think what you're talking about is when you're getting footing in your pause or your downshift, and then you're like, time is happening to me. We just talked a little bit about, you know, really getting intentional with the time you have at home so that it does feel like it's also your time. I think the two other pieces of this is, well, where does the time come from then, right? Because if, and I think the two big myths that hold women back are, one, that if you are a quote unquote stay at home mom, you have to be a super mom, which means you have to do all the things now. And so part of that is when we're scrolling social media and we see someone with a beautiful home and someone with a beautiful kitchen and someone with, you know, cooking nourishing meals and someone else doing crafts, we put it together and it's this amazing composite of all these wonderful things, not realizing everyone's picking and choosing what matters to them and letting go of the other things, right? So I might have done arts and crafts, but I was, you know, I was choosing to do chicken nuggets so that I could have naps and night times for myself, right? So I think picking and choosing the things you care about, lowering the standard on the things you don't to free up time is an important piece. The other piece is one of the myths that hold women back and sad tropes is that if you're not doing paid work, you don't deserve support. I mean, I fell into that trap, right? The guilt of investing in childcare. The biggest reframe I can offer there is an investment in whatever care you're outsourcing, right? Whether it be, you know, 10 hours of a babysitter or cleaning help or a meal service is an investment into the whole household. It comes out of the entire joint household income, which is shared because of the work that you are contributing to the home. And I think it was really important to me to understand that children are best served not by a parent struggling through it and being there, quote unquote, but a healthy and whole parent. And I think that that was a piece that took me a long time to get to. But had I gotten there earlier, every year I would have come into, okay, this is how things are feeling. What areas can I either lower the standard on or delegate and or outsource so that I can have time back for myself, so that I can invest back into myself, because this chapter is not just about and in service to the kids. It has to be a time for myself to grow and explore too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you highlighted the piece about childcare being an investment in you and your family unit, right? And it doesn't need to link back to the mother only and their specific income. So I think that's really important. So I love to give you sort of two contrasting moms / scenarios and get your advice, because I know so many women will be able to relate to these situations. So for the woman who's maybe just starting her family, she's in the throes of early motherhood, maybe in the middle of a downshift, what advice would you have for her?
Well, I think a few things. One, as we talked about, your identity is evolving. Your ambition does not rely on, you know, what you did and how many hours you worked. Your ambition is really, you know, aligning your time with what you value and really trusting in the long game that you'll be recalibrating often. And so I think encouraging her to root herself in that sense of ambition, in that sense of feminism, and know that this is just one chapter is really important. I do think the financial piece is important, and having ongoing conversations. I would encourage her to do some of those exercises we talked about. In you know, it can be so easy, especially with young kids, to fall into that trap of now, you know, my motherhood and is sort of the sole metric of my success. But encouraging her to think about this as a time that, yes, she's shifting away from paid work, but she's also potentially unlocking ways in which to build new relationships outside of the workforce, explore new interests. I think that there's one other exercise I often encourage women to do whenever they think of it, which is open a Google Doc or an iPhone Notes app and start just bulleting out moments that you feel lit up, or like when there's a podcast you listen to that piques your interest, or you're scrolling Instagram and there's like a post you linger on a little bit, or you have a conversation with your partner that they really take an idea away from, because those little things that seem so disparate actually often leaves clues for what you may be interested in down the line. Mm-hmm. They may actually be sub bullets when you go back to work and you're putting together your resume. Those like seemingly ordinary things that we do in the day to day can actually be these, you know, really impressive pieces when framed the right way. So I encourage her to think about this as a moment for like serious self-study.
Yeah, I love that. And highlighting again the point you made earlier around the seasons, right? This is a season. This may not be your next season, but like those breadcrumbs that you said. I love a good like notepad in your phone moment, by the way. So in contrast to that, so for the mom who is maybe ready to get back to work, but doesn't know where to start, and maybe they aren't looking to go back full-time traditional role at a company, but maybe looking to dip their toe into something entrepreneurial, what advice or tidbits would you have?
So I actually think going back to the example I just shared with the iPhone notes. So there was a woman in North Carolina who did the iPhone notes. She was about, I encourage women not to think that they're going to like go back to work tomorrow if they start feeling that nudge. It usually takes about a year, right? But if they're starting to consider, well, where might I want to go? I think that that notes app, this woman down in North Carolina was chronicling all the sort of things that piqued her interest. And when she looked back, one of the things that popped out to her was that she had helped reorganize a bus route for her kids. You know, it seemed like this random bullet she was writing. And then as she's looking at it, she realizes, wait a second, I really love project management. Like it allowed her to better understand what her skills were and how they've evolved in her time away. And what she started to do is then think about, well, how could I start to flex that muscle a little bit? And she started to volunteer in her school in a project management capacity. She started to offer to help friends in that capacity. And what you can see she's doing is she's building up skills in an area that she rediscovered is of interest to her. So you can see how if someone wants to do a pivot or discovers a new area, they might think about opportunities available to them in the school, in their community, that maybe aren't paid, but are a great stepping stone, right? To build up that experience and network around it. Oftentimes when we think of networking, quote unquote, we think of it as in a conference or in, you know, a structured office setting. But some of the best stories I've heard are from women who are like sitting on the sidelines at a swim meet and just offer like, I'm thinking about going back in this capacity. And it's always their mom friends that have a connection, right? So don't shy away from putting it out there in those settings that you're normally in and saying yes to when women may offer a connection or offer an opportunity for you to come help to build out that experience.
Yeah. And to your point, like sometimes it's right in front of you. It's like just talking up the moms that are sitting at the swim lesson or at the soccer game or at the baseball field. Like literally you can start there.
There's this great story of a woman I interviewed, Priscilla de Moisan, out in Napa. And she was like feeling a bit lost. She'd been in tech and she went to a swim meet and said yes to what she calls the super connector, right? The woman who's just like hosting the things. And she says yes to them. She goes to a book club this woman's hosting and she committed to herself to just be vulnerable, to make the ask. Someone said, how are you? She was like, I'm actually feeling like a bit lost. And someone else said, me too. And the two of them ended up meeting every week for a burrito backyard session every Wednesday afternoon for 2 years to help be sounding boards for each other, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that those opportunities sometimes come in the shape of, oh, I'm starting a nonprofit and I'd love your help with it. And sometimes it's just someone else who's sort of navigating it with you.
Yeah, I love that. So Neha, as one of my last questions, there's actually a short, very short quote at the beginning of your book that stuck out to me so much. And it's so simple, but you said, but like everything in motherhood, it's yours to make your own. I'd love if you could elaborate a little bit on that quote. And also if there's like a 1 to 2 big takeaways that you want people to walk away from your book or this conversation with today.
When I talk about making it your own, I think one of the gifts of motherhood is realizing that whether you're co-sleeping or you're sleep training or you're bottle feeding or you're breastfeeding or, you're, you know, you're going to learn really early that you're the only one who knows what's right for you. And you will build this power of tuning into what's right for you because it keeps your children and your family the healthiest version. And I think so much of this book is, like I said, not to say there's one choice that's right. It's to encourage you to think about the permutations of work and family and know that they don't threaten your ambition, they don't threaten your feminism, that when you take your foot off the gas, that you can actually still grow in really meaningful ways, that these ways, these environments that we've sort of dumbed down for a long time, right? The PTA or mom groups or Instagram or little blogs, these can actually be really interesting ways to explore your interests, to explore your network, that actually when we, you know, if I were to offer anything, it's that your identity, we've talked a lot about it, your identity of what you did previously doesn't evaporate. This is actually a really interesting layer to put on top of it. And, you know, when you return, if you choose to return to the paid workforce, you're actually not bringing with you like a career ladder. You're bringing with you a portfolio of all of that great experience that you had. And then this incredible non-traditional experience that you develop in parenthood. And I can say now, almost 10 years into parenting, so I still have a lifetime to go, that I've grown more in parenthood than in any other capacity in life. I've stretched myself more intellectually, stretched myself more emotionally. I've softened, I've gotten stronger. And I think when we open ourselves up to that, it can be a really, it can be a really rich time.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the idea of leaning into all of the goodness that's coming out of that and this newer, stronger, more confident version of yourself, honestly. Mm-hmm. So Neha, as a last question, I love to ask my guests, what lights a fire in you? What is it that keeps you moving forward each day?
You know, when someone asked like, well, are you going to write any of your next book? And I was like, I didn't write this book to write a book. I wrote this book because I still sit down with people and they still say, oh, she's just a mom. Or I still hear women saying, I'm just a mom. And I don't think I could stop doing this work in all its formats until people stop saying that. Because when I entered into motherhood, I never thought of it as just a mom because I've put my mother on a pedestal. Like she just did. She was the backbone of our family. She was such a multi-hyphenate and she was at home with me for many years, but I saw it as fluid and I want that for my daughter. I want my daughter to grow up and have that same sense of fluidity, but a same sense of like how motherhood can open me up to all these incredible ways that I'm going to grow and be in the world. So that lights me up. That keeps me.
That gave me chills. It's very inspiring. And thank you so much for this conversation. Keep doing what you're doing. What's next for you? Anything you want to shout out? Anything you want to share with the audience today?
You can come visit thepowerpause.com because there's so many incredible free resources to whether you're preparing or you're returning or you're existing in between. Subscribe to the newsletter. I'm in your inbox every Sunday. And obviously do get the book or share it with anyone who could use a roadmap for this stage of life.
Yes. And can you shout out your Instagram handle where everyone can follow you, find you, and keep up with you?
You can follow me at Neha Roush, N-E-H-A underscore R-U-C-H on Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much. This was incredible. You are incredible. Appreciate you.
Aw, so kind.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode. If there's someone you think this conversation would resonate with, please share it with a friend. Tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at mroberts.m. Subscribe, follow, and leave a review and connect with us. We love to hear from you and we want to chat soon.